Tensions are high between Saudi Arabia and its critics following the disappearance and suspected murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. In a statement, Khashoggi's family has called for an independent and impartial international commission to investigate the circumstances of his death. Khashoggi is not the first Saudi dissident to be targeted for being critical of the Saudi regime, but his death is raising questions about the United States' close financial ties with the kingdom. Last week, a group of bipartisan senators called for sanctions and an end to arms sales to Saudi Arabia, but the U.S.'s complex relationship with their government goes back to the 1930s when oil exploration began in the kingdom. Joining us to discuss the economic relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia is Ben Freeman. He's the director of the Foreign Influence Transparency Initiative at the Center for International Policy. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So let's start with the basics. What is the economic relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, and what are some of the major commodities that we tend to exchange?
Well, as you mentioned, the economic relationship goes back decades, and it's founded on oil, basically. The Saudis sit on one of the largest oil deposits in the world and have been one of the leading exporters of oil for decades. But recently, they've realized that those oil reserves aren't going to last forever, and so they've taken steps to try and diversify their economy. Also, another factor in it is that the U.S. is producing more and more oil through fracking and other means that make it less reliant on Saudi oil. And so in some cases, the Saudis have diversified that economy to other areas, including arms manufacturing and buying military arms and bombs and planes from the U.S.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about those defense contractors, because Reuters reported a couple days ago that they were quite concerned with the idea of sanctions. And I'm going to play a clip here from President Trump talking to Leslie Stahl about that issue this week on 60 Minutes.
Would you consider imposing sanctions as a bipartisan group of senators had proposed?
Well, it depends on what the sanction is. I'll give you an example. They are ordering military equipment.
So would you cut that off?
I tell you what I don't want to do. Boeing, Lockheed, Raytheon, all these, I don't want to hurt jobs. I don't want to lose an order like that. There are other ways of
punishing,
to use a word that's a pretty harsh word, but it's true.
So we looked up the financial statements for Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and Raytheon, three of the biggest weapons manufacturers in the United States, and we found that they made a lot of money. I mean, combined, they reported more than $169 billion in revenue for 2017. But Trump has said that under his administration, there have been more than $100 billion worth of arms sales to Saudi Arabia. Is that even accurate?
Yeah, part of the problem with the president's argument is that it starts with a number that's not actually based in reality. It's, to use his term, it's fake news. This $110 billion in arms sales to Saudi Arabia, it's realistically never a number that's going to materialize. Last year, we sold less than $10 billion to Saudi Arabia. So I have no real idea where the other $100-plus billion in arms sales is supposed to come from. The other problem with the idea is that arms sales are not a great jobs creator. A lot of these firms that he's mentioning, you know, your Lockheed Martins and your Raytheons, at the same time their revenues have been going up, they've actually been cutting jobs here in the U.S. And some of these jobs have been going overseas to places like Saudi Arabia. So the net economic impact to the U.S., I think, is negligible at best. So the idea of saying that if we cut off these arms sales, it'll cripple the U.S. economy, I think at the very least, that's hyperbolic.
So, Ben, how about President Trump and the Trump Organization? What personal economic stake do they have in Saudi Arabia?
They have immense personal stakes in Saudi Arabia. In fact, it goes back decades between Trump and Saudi Arabia. He's been doing business there for at least two decades that we know of. He's famously said things like, well, he loves the Saudis. They buy $20, $30, $40 million condos in some of his hotels. During the campaign alone, he started eight new businesses in Saudi Arabia related to hotel ventures there. And mind you, that was just during the course of his less than 2 year campaign. So you fast forward to when Trump takes office and the Saudis start this great lobbying and PR enterprise. And they capitalize on a lot of that. They know Trump has not fully divested from his businesses, and they know they can use that as leverage against him.
What would sanctions or could sanctions look like that would actually have an impact from a business standpoint?
I think there's a lot of options for sanctions. I think it's important for folks to realize that it's the U.S. that has the advantage here, not the Saudis. The Saudis rely much more on us than we rely on Saudi Arabia. And as I mentioned previously, they're trying to diversify their economy right now. In this conference that has been reported in the news, the so-called Davos in the Desert conference that's planned for a couple weeks from now. A lot of American businesses have already pulled out from that, and other foreign businesses, too. Richard Branson pulled out from it, for example. And so even independent of what Congress does with sanctions, I think you're already seeing plenty of blowback from the business community. And I think that's only going to continue if the Saudis continue this very misleading storyline that they've been on.
Can you tell us about Saudi economic influence inside the United States, especially when it comes to lobbying our lawmakers? Do you think that that's something that will prevent sanctions?
In 2017, when Donald Trump was elected president, the Saudis really doubled down on their already very large lobbying and public relations campaign that they were running in the U.S. In 2016, for example, they spent a little under $10 million on lobbying and public relations firms. By the end of 2017, they had spent over $27 million that year. So you see almost this tripling of their influence operation. And what they did, they hired a lot of lobbying and public relations firms with folks that were close to the Trump administration and just other large, very well-connected firms on both the Republican and Democratic sides of the aisle. My organization has documented many instances where lawmakers took campaign contributions from Saudi lobbyists on the exact same day they met with them. But I think despite that, there's a very good chance that Congress will actually pass sanctions, and they will. They might also punish the Saudis in other ways, including cutting off arms sales and cutting off U.S. military support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen.
And very briefly, do you see this having any impact on the markets, Ben?
The Saudi markets, for sure. We've already seen some pretty dramatic impacts on the Saudi economy. But in terms of the U.S. economy, again, we just don't rely that much on Saudi Arabia economically for business ventures yet. Certainly in the arms manufacturing industry, Saudi Arabia is the number one buyer of U.S. military equipment and arms sales. But I think there's plenty of, you know, non-economic reasons to question those to begin with. The war in Yemen has been declared the largest humanitarian crisis in the world, and U.S. bombs have been found to have killed civilians in that conflict. So to stop those bombs from flowing to Saudi Arabia could protect the lives of civilians in Yemen.
Ben Freeman is the director of the Foreign Influence Transparency Initiative at the Center for International Policy. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.